Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein. Welcome to a responsible day for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, for the first day of the month of the Rosh Chodesh. There are 2 days of Rosh Chodesh of the month of Cheshvan, because Tishrei is always a male. So it's actually an interesting question as to whether I should count this as a responsible day for the month of Tishrei or for the month of Cheshvan. In my computer, I've got those in two different files. My Bar Ilan calendar, which is a wonderful addition to the Bar Ilan responsive project, tells me that the first day of Rosh Chodesh should be thought of as in the day of Tishrei, because it's actually the 30th of Tishrei. But when I look for responsa, they're always dated. Those that are dated will be dated to the first day of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, so that my search engine will find it by that way. So we're going to do it that way. We're going to treat it as the first day of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. And our responsa for today is the Chatam Sofer, discussing brachot on certain kinds of mitzvah, which mitzvah we make brachot on, which mitzvah we do not, and setting out some guidelines for that for us. So it's a Chatam Sofer from Chelek Aleph, first section, Orech Chaim section of that, Siman Nun Dalet. And it's a response he wrote to Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes. He's a really very interesting figure. He was at the time of this letter and others, and for I think much of the end of his life, the Rav at a place called Zolkva. But he is, and I feel like we've seen him before, I don't remember exactly how, maybe another correspondence with Rith, the Chatam Sofer, but he is a very interesting figure. He's, I think they say he's the only one who has a commentary printed in the back of the common printing, the Rum printing of the Shas of the Babylonian Talmud, who had a PhD. He was a bit of a scholar, he was a bit of a scholar in a time when being a scholar made you usually suspect in the Orthodox world, that he was a fully Orthodox man. He had some interesting ideas because of his background, but he was a Talmud Chacham, and he had many correspondences, I think, with the Chatam Sofer. And so now they have a correspondence about halachic issues. So he had sent an idea to the Chatam Sofer, and the Chatam Sofer, you know, is very happy with it and appreciates it, that in the Yerushalmi, in the beginning of Ketzad Mevorchim, which is the sixth chapter of Brachot, they tell a story of Rav Chagi and Rav Yirmiyah. The Gemara says, and the Yerushalmi says, they were sulkin lebei chenvata. They went to, bei chenvata is going to be a term, we're going to have to figure out what it means, but Rav Chagi jumps up and made a bracha. Doesn't tell us what bracha, but he made a bracha. Rav Yirmiyah says, good that you made a bracha, because all observances of mitzvot require a bracha. So that sets up a theoretical assumption that then becomes very difficult in other practical questions. We'll get to some of them in this tshuva, but it becomes a question to think about as to when and what brachot do and don't get a bracha, because it's clearly not true that all mitzvot get a bracha. As we'll talk today, the mitzvot tztaka doesn't get a bracha. That will come up in this responsum here, so I'm not digressing by saying that. So, but this Rav Yirmiyah says to Rav Chagi, beautiful Rav Chagai, maybe. This is beautiful, you made a bracha, because all brachas, how do we know? Rav Tanchuma, Rav said, in the name of Rav Bar Kahan, in the name of Rav, I think Rav Eliezer, Hashem says to Moshe, and I gave you the stone tablets and the Torah and the mitzvah, which sort of links Torah and mitzvah to each other. Just like Torah needs a bracha beforehand, so too mitzvah needs a bracha beforehand. Now, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, who was known as the Maharaz Chayes, had found a commentary in the Yerushalmi, or an interpretation of the Yerushalmi by a man named Mara Fulda, and he had said that the bracha that this Rav Chagai had made was, he made a bracha on the mitzvat asay, on the obligation of b'tzedek tishpot amitecha. There is a mitzvah in the Torah that we're supposed to make sure to have justice functioning, and this is the judge right and correctly and well. And he said that's the bracha that Rav Chagai was making. I mean, he's understanding it to mean they were coming to this place to set up as judges for the day, and he in the morning jumps up and he says, okay, as we're about to do this, I'm going to make a bracha, basically al hamishpat, right, or lishpot b'tzedek, or something along those lines. Now, so the Maharaz Chayes had a problem, because he knew a tshuva of the Rashba in Siman Yurchet, where the Rashba said you shouldn't make a bracha on asiyat mishpat, on enacting justice, shema lo yikablu hadin. So Shemelo Yikablu Adin means maybe the litigants won't agree that it was a correct verdict. They might have to follow the verdict because of the power of the court, but maybe they won't agree. And the Rashba seems to say that that means that the bracha isn't in place. You shouldn't make a bracha on it. So Maharaz Chayes didn't understand if this reading of the Yerushalmi was correct, of the Maharaf Fulda, that the bracha, the Reb Chagai in the Yerushalmi in bracha, he made a bracha on having just on acting justly, then how come the Rashba didn't mention it? So then Rav Schleis said the truth is that he doesn't understand what the Rashba means, because the Rashba says maybe the judges, maybe the litigants won't accept the verdict, but we coerce verdicts. So what do we care if the litigants accept it or not? Meaning, if the mitzvah is to enact justice, and we have a court case, and the court judges issue their ruling on the court case, and the litigants don't like it, but the judges force it to happen, justice has been served. So why would the Rashba say that would be a reason not to make a bracha? As if you're not enacting justice, you are enacting justice. So therefore, the Maharetz Chayyim suggested that when you're forcing justice on people through the coercion and the powers of the court, that's not considered the mitzvah in its fullest form, and it's a kilko. It's sort of it's almost a destruction of society, because while it's ultimately going to help society functioning better, but at the moment the litigants don't like it, they're not happy about it, and they see it as a problem, or at least one of them does, maybe both of them sometimes. So then you can only make the bracha on the beginning of the process, so you don't know how the process is going to turn out. We have a principle called davar she'ein asiyato gvar mitzvah ein mevarchin, that anything where it's functioning, its performance is not the completion of the mitzvah, you don't make the bracha on it. And the Maharetz Chayyim says that's what the Rashba meant. You shouldn't make a bracha at the beginning, because maybe they won't accept it. And if they don't accept it, then when you started it out, it wasn't actually a full mitzvah, because coercive justice, Maharetz Chayyim is suggesting, doesn't count as the full mitzvah of B'tzedek Tishpot Amitecha. And then you don't have to worry about the Yerushalmi, because when the Yerushalmi, because it happens to be that the Yerushalmi's opinion is that we do, in fact, make brachos on the beginnings of mitzvah. So, for example, there's a Yerushalmi that says that when one is building a sukkah, one should make a bracha on the building, because the building is the start of a mitzvah. So if you make a bracha on the start of a mitzvah, then you can make a bracha upon sitting down to have a court case, because you'd say, this is the beginning of a mitzvah. And the Yerushalmi would say that the beginning of a mitzvah gets a bracha, even if we're not positive how the mitzvah is going to turn out. But we in the Bavli, the Bavli doesn't hold that way. The Bavli holds that we only make a bracha on the beginning of a mitzvah if we are confident that we know that it's going to end up, it's going to be all the way through and complete to a mitzvah, and it happens in a relatively short time frame. And it is a gvar mitzvah, it can be a whole complete mitzvah on its own. That's what we make a bracha. So that's why the Rashi would say, since we can't know that at the beginning, because we don't know how the litigants will react, then we can't make a bracha on it. So the Chatam Sofer is complimentary. Usfatayim yushak, but the lips should be kissed that say such wonderful things. But he's going to go on to give a different answer. Before we get to his day, he says, and if it hadn't been for what you said, I would have said the Rashi meant, and we'll get to it in a second. But the Maharetz Chayyim's view has in it many interesting factors. First, there's the brachos question, right? He's pointing out that the question of what we do and don't, on which kinds of mitzvah we do and don't make brachot, is sort of an open question, because the Yerushalmi thinks that we make a bracha even on the beginning of a mitzvah. The Yerushalmi is saying that as long as an action has mitzvah content to it, even if it may turn out that mitzvah content isn't brought to its, it doesn't, has potential that's not realized, that's not in the end fully realized, it doesn't matter to us, and we're allowed to make the bracha anyway, whereas we in the Bavli would say that that's not true. Second, this Rashba, and we're going to get to the Chasam Sofer's reading of this Rashba, the Maharetz Chayyim's reading of the Rashba would be that the fact that litigants are unhappy with the verdict and don't accept the verdict, meaning one possibility, a utopian possibility, is that the court comes out, people are suing each other for, you know, $100,000, $20,000, $15, $7, right? And the court case is $7, and they come out and they say, it turns out that so-and-so gets $482 of the $7, and so-and-so gets $218 of the $7. So the ideal would be that each party says, oh, good verdict, Baruch Hashem, we've had justice. That, according to the Rashba, if that was what we could be confident would happen, that would be justice, and therefore we could make a bracha on it. But since it's possible that one or both of the litigants would be unhappy, and then the court will say, well, too bad, you have to follow what the court says, that already the Rashba is saying, according to the Maritz Chayes understanding the Rashba to mean that that's not full justice. That's not anything about whether the verdict is correct or not. It's not anything about whether the judges have done their job well and come to the best possible decision. It's just, it sounds like the Maritz Chayes understands the Rashba to be saying that if the people don't walk away with the experience of it having been justice, even though it may in fact have been justice, it's not the full vision of what the Torah wanted and what the Torah was planning on, and therefore not the full completion of the mitzvah. Interesting claims about the nature of justice, also about the nature of brachos. The Chasam Sofer, the Chatam Sofer, is going to pick up on some of those issues in his reading of it as well, that will sort of expand our understanding of this. Because he says, without what you wrote, you know, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, I would have said the Rashba meant that maybe the litigants won't accept the verdict, and that affects the bracha in the following way. He says, it can't be true that we make a bracha lishpot bitzedek. Right? The bracha is just to give justice. And the reason we can't make that bracha, the Chatam Sofer says, and I think here he's talking about himself and his assumptions about life as well, is that we can't be sure that we're going to do justice. Ki, we have a psukim that say, we all make mistakes. Kishkiyo miyavin mitzaren nakeni. So if that's true, you can't make a bracha that I'm going to be confident we're going to give a verdict. Now, he says, that's not the judge's fault, right? Judges do their best. That's their job, right? And that's why the principle in the Gemara is, Ein lo l'dayan, ela masha inav ro'ot. A judge sees it the way a judge sees it, and that's his job. He may make a mistake, but that's not his problem. His problem is to do his best, to find out the facts, to find out the truth, and then to issue a verdict based on his best abilities to get to one. Right? And we trust that, right? We halakhically allow such a judge to confiscate money, to assign money from one person to another person, and that verdict holds until such time as we have reason to believe something should have changed. And the judge is allowed to put people into need to it, right? It's not like, let's say the judge, you know, three judges meet and they have a discussion about the $7 case and they say four, whatever it was, 82 goes to one, 218 to the other, and the litigant only got 42 says, I'm not listening to that. So they're allowed to put him in deed. They're allowed to sort of call upon the community to excommunicate him and to shun him and to banish him from the community until he's willing to accept communal discipline. If that's true, right, they're allowed to do that. So that means we trust them that they're right. The fact that this guy says you're completely wrong doesn't affect us at all. Nonetheless, Chatam Sofer says you should make a bracha on it because you can't be that positive that you're right. But if the two litigants agree and are happy with the verdict, and then Chatam Sofer says, "Hein ladin vehein litot," and they say they know and they accept it, whether it's the true verdict or not. Let's say they're mature enough to know that society needs verdicts, and they understand that the judges do their best, and sometimes they come out wrong, and they're all fine with that. So, and especially Chatam Sofer says, let's say they just come to a compromise. The judges forge a compromise between the parties. So that is the mitzvah aseh of din v'shalom, of producing justice and peace among the people. And that's what the Rashi was pointing out. You might have thought the mitzvah is for the judge to do his job. That's not the mitzvah, because in doing his job, he might make a mistake, and then he's not producing the justice that's really the job. So you can't make a bracha for that. But you might have thought you could make a bracha if the two litigants will agree, then you'll have done the mitzvah of producing justice and shalom and peace in the community. But there you can't make a bracha because maybe the litigants won't like the verdict. So that's why he thinks the Rashi was saying it. So that becomes very different than what the Maritz Chayes had it as. Maritz Chayes has had it that if they don't agree, then it sort of turns the whole verdict into coercion instead of a building up, and therefore it's a problem. He's saying no. He's saying you need the litigants' input because that means that it's a valuable thing, even if there was a mistake involved. Now, there's a huge assumption here that the fact that judges might make mistakes means they can't make a bracha on lishpot bitzedek, or lishpot, you know, or whatever he said. Right, that's what he said, lishpot lishpot bitzedek. So he's making a huge assumption that if they have to worry that maybe they will do it, they're making a mistake, they might make a mistake unwittingly, they can't say the word lishpot bitzedek. So that's an interesting question. I wouldn't have thought that, meaning, you know, when I buy a lulav, for example, and I shake a lulav, so I think we assume, we hope that it's a valid lulav. What if it turns out after the fact that I did my best to notice that it was a valid lulav and I missed the fact that it actually had this thing that rendered it invalid? So That doesn't mean I wouldn't have said that. We don't make say you can't make the bracha al netilat lulav just because the lulav might turn out to be puzzled with it. You didn't realize it. So here too, I find it interesting that the Chatam Sofer is so positive that you can't, that the Rashi would hold, you can't make the bracha of lishpot bitzedek, to judge justly, because you might make mistake. So that's an odd claim to make. In any case, it leads him down this road to say that there's an alternative path under which one could say the bracha was to create din v'shalom, but for that you need the buy-in of the litigants, and since you can't guarantee the buy-in of the litigants in the beginning, you can't make that bracha. He says that's also the reason maybe that we don't make a bracha when we appoint judges and enforcement officials, right? Shoftim v'shotrim, it's a mitzvah, and the Chatam Sofer says it's a mitzvah that's noheg b'chol makom b'chol zman. It applies it every time and place, which I think is uncontested. I don't think there's anything controversial about it saying that. It's only that when we watch a world in which, at least the world in which I live, in which, you know, in exile where I am, there are many, many Jews who don't have this idea, who don't even realize that when we have problems, we have issues, we're supposed to be going to adjudicators from the community. Shoftim v'shotrim, we're supposed to have in every community, or at least in every city, in a way that people will go to and people will make use of, people who judge among them. So that's just, as you notice, the Chatam Sofer taking for granted that which is no longer so obvious taking for granted. That's always a moment that I like to pause. So he says, look at the Ramban in the beginning of Parashat Shoftim, he talks about Shoftim v'shotrim. So the Ramban says you have to appoint such people, even if possibly there's never a court case that comes to them at all. You have a Beit Din, nobody ever gets into fights in this town, nothing ever comes before them. They're just around, they're available, but they never have a court case, right? So nonetheless, it's an obligation to appoint them, so that be ready. The Ramban, I think it's the Ramban still, I excerpt these tshuvot, meaning I go through them, and I take out the pieces that aren't so vital to the points that are being made, because many mishivim write at greater length than is, you know, if I'm going to write the most minimal way possible. So I just don't remember where the quote from the Ramban ends, but I could have looked it up. I apologize. I probably should have looked it up. In any case, but either the Ramban, I think the Ramban or the Chatam Sofer says, you know, we make a bracha on bedikat chametz the night before Pesach, as we're about to check our house for chametz, we make a bracha that the mitzvah is to check for chametz. And the Ramban, I think it must be the Ramban, because by the time of the Chatam Sofer, you already had the Ramah saying we should lay out pieces just in case. Ramban says, even if you don't find, right? So we, Ashkenazim at least, make sure to lay out some chametz, because I think we're worried about that question. We say, well, what if you don't find, and maybe doesn't it have elements of being an unnecessary bracha? But this Ramban says, even if you don't find, the obligation is to check. You make a bracha on the obligation to check. So here too, the Chatam Sofer now says, shouldn't you make a bracha when we appoint judges to the local court? Because there's an obligation to have judges. And it's not a function of them judging cases, of having judges. So why don't we do that? So he says, because Adam Yireh La'inayim, we only see what we see. So maybe the judges that we're appointing aren't really good judges. They're not really valid judges. They're not the kinds of judges Hashem would want. Maybe they, and then he says, Ulai ika da'adife minaya, which is even a higher standard, meaning not only might it be that we'll pick people who aren't qualified, he's saying, it might even be a problem that we'll pick people and there are better people out there. And therefore, he says, we don't make a bracha on appointing the judge. Now he's really taking up a standard that's remarkable. He's saying that we would, in many mitzvot, only make the bracha if we are positive we're performing it in the right way. So if I make a bracha on enacting justice and I can't be positive I'm performing the right way because I might make a mistake, I don't make that bracha. If I'm appointing judges and I can't be positive that I'm appointing the right judges, I don't make that bracha. And then he says another example of this, he thinks, is writing a Sefer Torah. Why don't I make a bracha on the writing of a Sefer Torah, even though the writing is a full mitzvah? He says the answer is, and again, I'm not arguing with him because he's a Chatam Sofer and I'm not, but I think this is a remarkable claim to make, that unless one is positive, one is fulfilling a mitzvah. To me, that would mean, how do I make a bracha on my tefillin every morning, unless I've had a sofer check my tefillin that morning to be sure that they're okay, but we seem to. So I would think of those as counterexamples. He doesn't raise those, but he gives this as the third example he gives of this kind of a mitzvah, where we can't be sure that we're fulfilling it. The truth is, in the case of Sefer Torah, he has a much stronger argument, because the Gemara is very clear that already in the time of the Gemara, they thought they weren't what's called b'ki'in b'chaserot v'yiterot. They didn't have the full tradition as to which words in the Torah should be written with an extra vav, without an extra vav. There are words that you write in its fuller form, and there are words you write in its lesser form, and it's not always clear which are which. And the Gemara already says we don't have that full tradition anymore. That would mean that we're not sure that when we write a Sefer Torah, it's a fully valid Sefer Torah, because we have a clear tradition in the Gemara as well. From Gemara Menachot, that makes it clear that a Torah, Sefer Torah that's written wrong, missing even one letter, isn't considered a full Sefer Torah, and therefore, Chasam Sofer is saying, since you can't know, therefore you can't be sure you're writing a Sefer Torah, and therefore you can't make a bracha on the writing of the Sefer Torah. Now, that last one is a little clearer, because there, that is an important claim about Sefer Torah. I remember once upon a time, I thought I was going to learn Shagas Aryeh, and I came across, I didn't think I was going to learn Shagas Aryeh. I came across a Shagas Aryeh about the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, because there's all discussion about it, because people generally don't do it anymore, and then there's a tradition of commentary. Maybe in the Sefer Chinuch might already be, the Rush already has it, and this is what many of us rely on, is that the Rush said that maybe in our days, where people don't really learn from Sefer Torah anymore, the obligation is more about having books around to learn from, rather than about actual Sefer Torah, and then writing pieces of learning rather than necessarily an actual Sefer Torah. And the Shagas Aryeh didn't like that idea, so he wanted to know why it is we don't write Sefer Torah anymore. He said maybe the mitzvah of writing Sefer Torah isn't so vital today, because we don't know if we're writing it right anyway, for the same reason, because we don't know Chaserot Yetirah. So this idea that we don't really have, our Sefer Torah have problems in them because we don't have a full, firm tradition about all the lettering of the Sefer Torah, that the Chatzim Sofer is taking to this other extreme, that would mean we can't make a bracha on the mitzvah because we don't know the fulfilling mitzvah. In this case, not only don't we know it, in this case, we're pretty sure we're not quite fulfilling it in its fullest way. That's a daring idea about when we do and don't make brachot. Then he comes back to the Yerushalmi that started all this, right? The Yerushalmi that started all this was that they were coming to have a court case, and one of the judges jumped up to say a bracha on the fact they were going to judge a court case. So Chatzim Sofer says, if that's the interpretation, then, and they're sitting down to judge a case, why was that taken, or why was it seen as a proof that you make a bracha on mitzvot? Right, that's what he says in the Yerushalmi there. The other one praises him, and he says, you see, you make a bracha on mitzvot, and they bring a proof from the juxtaposition of Torah and mitzvah, right? Just like Torah has a bracha, so too mitzvah has a bracha. What? Until now, they didn't know that you make a bracha on mitzvah like tefillin and tzitzis and maror. So the Chasam Sofer says, no, he thinks that it was something else. That what was happening was they were going into a certain place where they were going to sit there and be prepared. That was the place where they waited to see. No, I'm not just court cases, but they also looked into the needs of the community, right? So because very often courts in the halakhic system, courts responsible both for judging cases, like the judiciary, but they're also sometimes responsible for making new takanot, new ordinances, and finding ways to help the city thrive. So, especially in a time when we don't have a king, and we don't have that kind of an executive function, but the din would often fulfill sort of all sorts of functions for the community. So he thinks here, in this Yerushalmi, they were coming to have a gathering of judges, of people of quality, to see what are the needs of the city. So it wasn't that there was any specific mitzvah in front of him. It was, as he got there in the morning, they're coming to begin the process of looking into these things, he made a bracha. Right? He's made a bracha, and the bracha is going to be on whatever of these kinds of mitzvahs come their way that day, in terms of taking care of the community. So Rav Chagai made a bracha. Even though they might come one by one, there might be a long break among them, right? And he says, and that then fits the proof from Birchas HaTorah, right? That's what the proof was that there was Torah and mitzvah were juxtaposed. He says, because Torah, what we do is we make a bracha once in the morning, and then it lasts all day, and even though we might not learn Torah all the way in a row, we might learn for a little bit, and then we'll have to take a big break to go to work, and then we'll learn a little bit more, and we all do it based on that first bracha. And that was the point that Rav Yirmi was saying to Rav Chagai, was a good point that Rav Chagai had made, that as they were going to sit there all day waiting for the needs of the community to come their way so they could rule on them and talk about them and think about them, instead of each time making a bracha on the obligation to serve the community by finding out their needs and taking care of them, so he made the bracha right in the morning and have it last all day. Then the Chasam Sofer throws in, just to remind all of us how far we are from being giants of Torah knowledge, the Chatam Sofer throws in. Truth is, even though the language of Yerushalmi doesn't say quite that, it's much too brief to make all those points. He says, "Habaki baderech shas Yerushalmi yavin ki nimsakim kama pamim." People who know the Yerushalmi well, like me, basically, meaning he says, I've learned enough Yerushalmi to see this is something Yerushalmi does. So there are bekiim in the ways of the Yerushalmi, and he was saying then it's clear. But that we don't follow that ruling. We follow Rabbi Yehuda, who in Sukkah Mem Vav and Aleph said, no, we make, when it comes to mitzvot, we make a bracha on each mitzvot as it comes our way. We don't do that. Meaning, Rabbi Chagai was saying, you can make a bracha early in the morning on a type of mitzvah that's going to come your way several times during the day, and you don't know exactly when it's going to come your way, and that bracha can count for the whole day and for all the mitzvahs to come your way. And the Chassid Sofer is saying is, we don't rule that way. We don't follow that. We don't accept that perspective. We follow the perspective of the Bavli that we make a bracha on each mitzvah as it comes. And then another crucial issue that comes up is that Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes had held, the Maariv Chayes had held, that the Rashba had wrote that any mitzvah that isn't finished without somebody else helping you, you can't make a bracha on it. And that's why you don't make a bracha on tzedakah. So because if the person who is supposed to accept the tzedakah, the charity, doesn't want it, there's no mitzvah. That's what the Rashba said. So that's why don't I make a bracha on tzedakah? Because I'm going to give money to the man, he's going to say, or the woman, and she's going to say, no, I don't need it, sorry, thank you. Even though they're poor, they say, I don't need it. Then all of a sudden, there's no mitzvah, and I made a bracha and no mitzvah. So Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes had a problem with that because he said, how do I make a bracha on getting married, on Erusin? What if she all of a sudden says, I don't want to get married, right? Man says a bracha, makes a bracha, she says, no, thank you, I changed my mind. There's no mitzvah, so we shouldn't make that bracha at all. And she doesn't have a mitzvah period of Rivia, so we make the bracha. So Chassid Sofer says, you didn't read it carefully enough or well enough. He apologizes for saying it that way, but that's the truth. Because the Rashba didn't mean any mitzvah where another person has the ability to nix it. He meant any mitzvah where it's for the good of the other person. And if the other person doesn't want to accept it, they don't have to. Then there's no mitzvah. But in terms of getting married, the man has a mitzvah to have children. And that's a mitzvah that Hashem applied to him, and that means that he has to find a woman who's willing to marry him, interested in marrying him, and marry her, and they should have children together. And if he doesn't find an woman to marry, however that works, that's a whole different discussion for a different time, but he would be considered somebody who didn't fulfill a mitzvah because he wasn't able to. And in any mitzvah where it could be that somebody will stop you from doing it, right? You won't find an etrog, or people will steal it from you. So that's not what the Rashba was talking about. He said, you don't make a bracha because maybe something like that will happen, right? Maybe how to make a bracha on a lulav and etrog, maybe after I make the bracha, somebody will grab it from me and I'll know and run away with it and I won't have it. So that's not what we mean. We don't mean that there might be something that will stop you from doing it. He means that in those mitzvahs where it's for the other person and the other person might reject it, then there's no mitzvah at all. Whereas with the case of having children, a man thinks he found the woman who wants to marry him. He thinks they're in love. He thinks they're getting married. He comes to tell her to get married, to get married. He makes the bracha. Says, no, I changed my mind. That's out of his control. Or he doesn't make the bracha. That's out of his control. So that's not where we don't make mitzvah. We don't make mitzvah because there's still a mitzvah. He still has a mitzvah. So he made a bracha on a mitzvah that he was trying to fulfill, and then something came along and took away his fulfillment, his ability to fulfill the mitzvah from him. But with people, and the person turns it down, there's no obligation anymore, so that's a reason not to make the mitzvah. That's what he says. That's not quite clear, because it turns out, though, that hard explanation to the mitzvah of getting of the bracha we say under the chuppah about getting married, it's unclear, because the getting married isn't the gemar mitzvah, isn't the completion of the mitzvah. So I think there are others who hold that bracha isn't a birchas mitzvah at all, isn't a bracha on the mitzvah of getting married, it's something else. So that's a different discussion, but that's a discussion, this is a discussion of the way the Chatam Sofer has it with the Maariv Chayes in this situation. Chassid Sofer also suggests that the bracha we make there, which is Asher Kishem Tzav Sivanu Al Ha'arayot, so that the Maariv Chayes had said, no, I think Chassid Sofer suggested that we say it that way because the reason we get married, because after all, the truth is, somebody has children, you sometimes hear about various public figures, like sports figures, who have all these children out of wedlock. So the truth is, halachic purposes, if a Jew did that, they would have fulfilled the mitzvah period of Rivia. They would have violated other things in the Torah, but they would fulfill the mitzvah period of Rivia. They have children out of wedlock. So why do we make sure to have children in wedlock? Because there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Umala'ar et zima, you don't want the land to be filled with inappropriate sexuality, which is that if people don't know who their fathers are, and people are having children out of wedlock, you can eventually having relatives getting married without realizing it. Brothers marrying sisters and not realizing it because they don't know who their father is, or their father went by a different name, or however it happened. So the mitzvah of period of Rivia is really that somebody should marry a woman and be sure they're in an exclusive relationship, and that way we know who's related to whom, and that's why we say Asher Kishem Tzavat Tzvanu Al Ha'arayot, because this need to make sure we avoid arayot, inappropriate relationships, is what's pushing us to greatly value marriage over just having children wherever we happen to have them. In addition, the Chassid says, you know what, another explanation, and he thinks the even better one, is the word arayot doesn't mean prohibited relationships. It really means, arayot means developing the closeness that's created within a marriage, within a sexual relationship. That physical closeness, that's called arayot. When we call the prohibited ones arayot, what we really mean is arayot ta'asurim. And we get it from the fact that the Torah says, lo tigale ervatan, don't, you know, uncover so-and-so's nakedness because of the relationship otherwise you have with them. And it's a prohibition in the Torah to do that. But the word arayot just means to develop this kind of close relationship, is what the Chassam Sofer is saying. So when we make the bracha, what we mean is that Hashem commanded us to get married and have our children in the context of a marriage which has that closeness to it. That closeness is a positive form of arayot. And that's what we're referring to in the bracha. There's one last piece I didn't get to about the bracha on Shechita, but we have here enough to see the Chassam Sofer's view of, and his discussion with the Baruch Chayes, of brachot ha-mitzvah, of the brachos we make on mitzvot, and how they work and how they don't work, when we can and when we cannot make a bracha, some of the issues that come up, of how soon the bracha will be fulfilled, the mitzvah will be fulfilled, of whether there are other people who have control over the mitzvah, and what kinds of mitzvot are affected by that, and the views of the Yerushalmi, and the views of the Rashba, and the Baruch Chayes, and the Chassam Sofer, issues in how we do and don't make bracha on a mitzvot, and that is a responsible day for the first day of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, the 30th of Tishrei. Have a great day.